Today, last gasp or a new upswing? Market review for the 16th of October 2021. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. What an latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. In today's show, we look at the latest from the markets as investors balance better than expected corporate earnings against the inflation risks that continue to plague the global economy. Energy prices continue higher, adding more pressure, while the latest from China suggests the central bank there has no intention of rescuing Evergrande for now as the property sector contagion continues. US stocks rose on Friday and the Dow Jones scored its biggest weekly percentage gain since June as Goldman Sachs rounded out a week of strong quarterly earnings for the big banks. Goldman Sachs shares jumped 3.8% and gave the Dow its biggest boost as a record wave of deal-making activity drove a surge in the bank's quarterly profit. Goldman's report followed strong results from the Bank of America and others this week. Banks were among the biggest positives for the S&P 500 of the day, and the bank index climbed 2.1%. Results from big financial institutions provided a strong start to third quarter US earnings, though investors will still watch in coming weeks for signs of impacts from supply chain disruptions and higher costs, especially for energy. Forecasts now call for the third quarter S&P earnings to show a 32% rise from a year ago. The latest forecast based on results from the 41 S&P 500 companies and estimates for the rest is up from 29.4% at the start of October. We're starting to get into an earnings-driven rally here that I hope lasts. We'll see the results in the next couple of weeks as a great bulk of companies in all sectors report, said Peter Tutz, president of Chase Investment Counsel in Charlottesville, Virginia. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 1.09%, 35,294. The S&P 500 gained 0.75% to 4,471. And the Nasdaq Composite added 0.5% to 14,897. In fact, the Dow jumped 1.6% for the week, its biggest weekly percentage gain since the 25th of June, and the S&P 500 had its strongest weekly advance since July the 23rd. Shares of cryptocurrency and blockchain-related firms gained as Bitcoin hit 60,000 US for the first time since April, and Riot Blockchain ended up 6.6%. The Commerce Department said that retail sales rose 0.7% last month. That confounded economists' forecasts for a 0.2% decline. The Retail Sales Control Group, which has a larger impact on US GDP, gained 0.8% above expectations for a 0.4% rise. The gain in retail sales suggests that the impact of the Delta variant of the coronavirus on consumer spending, which makes up about 60% of economic growth, is starting to wane. Consumer spending has remained resilient and reflects strong buying power and favourable credit conditions. The increase in food services throughout the Delta wave suggests households are better equipped to manage around COVID flare-ups, Morgan Stanley said in a note. The backdrop of optimism on the economic recovery pushed Treasury yields higher, underpinning bank stocks, which have been bolstered by upbeat quarterly results from major Wall Street banks. Financials are expected to continue to ride Treasury yields higher as investors bet that rates will still have room to advance. A break above key resistance on 10-year Treasury yield of 1.75% would complete the bearish thesis on bonds and confirm a move on the 10-year Treasury yield to 2% or a little above, David Keller, chief market strategist at Stock Charts, said. I think that we'll most likely get there, which is why I think financials probably present one of the better opportunities. Energy was up about 0.5% of all prices, continue to rack up gains on bets of possible supply shortages on higher demand as power plants are expected to switch to oil amid soaring natural gas and coal prices. The odds of a supply shortage were exacerbated by expectations for higher jet fuel demands, as travel activity is set to gather pace in the months ahead after the US said it would begin accepting vaccinated visitors from abroad starting November the 8th. The strong end of the week for the broader market follows several sessions of wild swings recently as it navigates its way through a traditional period of volatility, but it won't be long until the market finds its footing and trends higher. September and October tend to be the seasonally weakest parts of the year, while November and December tend to be the seasonally strongest parts of the year, Keller said. The volatility index, which measures the implied volatility of S&P 500 options, was down 3.23% to 1630. That's a new one-month low. Gold futures for December delivery was down 1.66% to 1,768. And crude oil for delivery in November rose 1.23% to $82.31 a barrel, while the euro US dollar was up 0.08% to 1.1603, and the US dollar index futures was down 0.02% to 93.94. The gold bull seems doomed with any early celebration these days. After brief euphoria at having reclaimed its $1,800 perch, those long the yellow metal were hurled back into the mid-1700s territory on Friday, as strong US retail sales for September led to a renewed spike in bond yields on speculation that the Federal Reserve might be forced to raise rates faster than it intends. US gold futures, the most active contract, settled at $1,768.30 per ounce on the COMEX, and that's down $29.60 or 1.7%. The session low itself was $1,765. On Thursday, gold reached almost $1,802, crossing the $1,800 for the first time since September the 15th, as it appeared to finally live up to its label as an inflation hedge and a safe haven days after oil prices hit seven-year highs above $80 per barrel. But any illusion that the yellow metal would extend its two-day run-up to go above $1,900 and eventually even $2,000 plus, gold was unable to hold onto the $1,800 level after a better-than-expected retail sales report and strong rounds of earnings sent US Treasury yields higher, denting appeal to non-interest-bearing assets, said Ed Moy, analyst at online trading platform Onda. While gold was ripe for profit-taking after it surged to $1,800, the downward move could extend if Wall Street continues to pump up equities. Moya noted gold bulls still need to be patient. Gold appears poised to consolidate here, but the start of a new bullish trend is around the corner once the global economic recovery gets on track and the dollar loses its dominance. We will see. European stocks were also higher, as gains in the utilities, retail and consumer and cyclical sectors led shares higher. The German DAX was up 0.81% to 15,587, while the UK FTSE was up 0.37% to 7,234. That's a new high for the year. The UK index has not peaked above last year's high yet, so in that regard, it is still miles behind its US and European counterparts. It clearly has some catching up to do, and this week's breakout suggests it may go to close the gap at least a little. The FTSE is a commodity-heavy index, so the big gains that we've seen for crude oil and copper prices have helped energy stocks and miners. Meanwhile, banks have risen along with yields in recent times as investors have become optimistic about a steady economic recovery and look forward to mild policy tightening from the Bank of England. Earnings have been decent. Had it not been for the worries over inflation and supply chain disruptions, we may have already seen some record highs for the FTSE, given accommodative central bank policies around the world and a sharp economic recovery from the pandemic. The FTSE may have just resolved a six-month consolidation, where it had been trading sideways within around 360 points. The index has broken out, and should it hold the breakout, then there may be higher significant moves ahead, simply because of the length of the time the bulls and the bears have battled it out for the bulk of this year. In Asia, Hong Kong's Hang Seng was up 1.48%, 25,330, after markets reopened after a holiday. China's Shanghai Composite inched up 0.4% to 3,572. China's credit growth slowed in September as weakness in the property market amid the Evergrande crisis weighed on financing and lending activities, despite the central bank's call to stabilize credit expansion. Aggregate financing was 2.7 trillion yuan, or $450 billion, the People's Bank of China said on Wednesday. That compares to 2.96 trillion yuan in August and 3.47 trillion yuan in September last year. The median estimate in a Bloomberg survey from economists was for 3.05 trillion yuan. Financial institutions offered 1.66 trillion yuan of new loans in the month, up from 1.22 trillion yuan in August. Economists have projected 1.81 trillion yuan. Banks made 466 billion yuan of medium and long-term loans to households in September. That's down more than 26% from the same month a year ago, and that was also below the level in 2019. These loans are often used as a proxy for mortgages and have been dropping since May compared to 2020 levels. Bloomberg reported that in a world where central bank stimulus has wiped out most of the distress from global bond markets, the troubles of China's property companies are standing out. Of the $139 billion of US dollar-denominated bonds trading at distressed prices, 46% were issued by companies in China's real estate sector, according to recent data from Bloomberg. That captured bond trades at yield premiums of at least 10 percentage points above their benchmark rates. Junk-rated dollar bonds from Chinese issuers have reached yields not seen in about a decade, following months of weakness on concerns about rising debt repayment pressure for developers and the sector's increasing number of defaults. One joke, widely shared on social media, sums things up rather well. This year's most tragic household: the husband lost his job as a real estate agent, the wife lost hers in education, they bought an Evergrande house and speculated on internet stocks before unexpectedly having a third child. In fact, China's central bank broke its silence on the debt crisis at China Evergrande Group, saying risks to the financial system stemming from the developer's struggles are, quote, controllable and unlikely to spread. Authorities and local governments are resolving the situation based on market-orientated and rule-of-law principles, People's Bank of China official Zhu Lan said at a news briefing on Friday. The central bank has asked lenders to keep credit to the real estate sector stable and orderly. Zhu is the head of the Financial Market Department. Concerns are growing that the cash crunch at Evergrande is spilling over to other developers as President Xi Jinping maintains strict measures to cool the property market. Contagion fears intensified over the past 2 weeks from a surprising default by Fantasia Holdings Group Co. and a warning from Cynic Holdings Group Co. that its default was imminent. In recent years, the company failed to manage its business well and to operate prudently amid changing market conditions, Zhu said of Evergrande. Instead, it blindly expanded and diversified. The central bank is urging property firms and their shareholders to fulfill their debt obligations, who said, a slump in developers' offshore dollar bonds is a natural market response to defaults, he added. And Zhu added that China's government had insisted that property not be used as a short-term stimulus for the economy, that cities have seen an excessive surge in property prices, which mortgage restrictions helped to curtail, that property investment has slumped recently after some developers face credit problems, but this is a normal market phenomenon, and some banks have misunderstood macroprudential policies regarding the property sector. This is the strongest signal yet that authorities won't come to the rescue of creditors of Evergrande and other developers, said Travis Lundy, a special situation analyst who publishes on Smart Karma. They are sticking to the stance that there won't be any property boosting measures aside from small steps such as faster home loan processing and efforts to alleviate mortgage limits at banks, he added. Financial regulators have told some major banks to accelerate approval of mortgages in the last quarter, Bloomberg reported earlier on Friday. Lenders were also permitted to apply to sell securities backed by residential mortgages to free up loan quotas, easing a ban imposed earlier this year. Yep, securitization's back. Does that remind you of 2008? Yet Evergrande is crumbling under more than $300 billion US dollars in liabilities. After years of ratcheting up debt to fund expansion, the sprawling conglomerate's financially risky behaviour became too dangerous for authorities to ignore earlier this year when China's central bank ordered the company to end its debt addiction. Evergrande said on September the 22nd that it will make a payment due on a domestic bond, which helped calm fears of an imminent default that could unleash financial chaos globally. The resulting liquidity crisis is widely expected to end in one of China's largest defaults, in what would be a severe shock for the country's property market and a blow for the Chinese Communist Party's campaign to tackle financial risks without harming economic growth or the everyday livelihoods of Chinese households. Global stock markets tanked on Monday amid growing panic of wider contagion, starting with foreign creditors left without payments. Fear of widespread fallout from a default leaves Chinese regulators with a dilemma. Analysts say they could intervene to support creditors, but that would reinforce bad corporate behaviour caused by assumptions that the government will step in whenever the situation gets out of hand, or they could choose not to prevent the default and risk roiling markets and wider financial distress. The question is, how much pain is the government willing to inflict to teach Evergrande and the sector a lesson, said Travis Abundi. It was always a situation of when, not if, real estate expansion would slow down because it had gotten clearly out of hand, he said. And yet, ending decades of rising property prices will not be a popular decision. How do you prick a bubble that every single person, from homeowners to local governments, doesn't want pricked? Nobody really wants to see this unwind. If it does, there is going to be a lot of pain, Lundy said. Actually, you could say the same about the Australian property market too, couldn't you? So far, the Chinese leadership appears inclined to allow a default. Beijing would only be compelled to step in if there is a far-reaching contagion causing multiple major developers to fail and posing systemic risks to the economy, S&P Global Ratings wrote in a note on Monday. Evergrande's market capitalization has plummeted from nearly $40 billion last year to just under $4 billion now. The cash crunch has halted construction at dozens of building sites across the country. And last week, angry suppliers and employees swarmed the group's headquarters in Shenzhen, demanding payment. Evergrande's operations span hundreds of projects across dozens of cities, making it difficult for the stability-obsessed party to ignore the public outcry. The regulator's priority will be to ensure that home buyers and suppliers are not left empty-handed. Creditors will be a secondary concern, analysts argue. For a Chinese leadership that prides itself on successful stewardship of China's economy after the 2008 global financial crisis, the comparisons to Wall Street's Lehman Brothers crisis are especially unwelcome. It's not the same as just letting Lehman go, said Zhu, adding that the Chinese government takes a fundamentally different approach to the United States because of the political and social importance of implicit guarantees of wealth. Some of the company's efforts to raise cash by asking for loans or encouraging employees to buy wealth management products have only served to sharpen focus on its methods of raising capital off the books. And actually, looking at China through an ETF lens shows plenty of red ink that may get value-orientated investors' hearts racing. But these are probably early days yet, as China's regulatory crackdown on the tech industry, which appears to be spilling out to the wider economy via marching orders from President Xi, evolves. The question is whether Beijing will go too far in biting the hand that fuels its economy. On paper, the weakness is starting to look intriguing, but given the uncertainty of political risks swirling through China, the potential for a new leg down can't be ruled out. China continues to harbour enormous opportunities, but there are many facets to the country's economy, and political upheaval this year will leave plenty of room for doubt about what comes next. In Australia, Australian shares closed at a three-week high on Friday, with strong performances from the materials and tech sectors buoying the market through the second half of the week. Financials were weaker. The S&P ASX 200 rose 41.9 points or 0.6% to 7,362 this week, rising 50 points or 0.7% on Friday alone. Despite falling in the first three sessions of the week, the share market staged a strong comeback on Thursday and Friday. The materials sector led the market higher, with base metal prices moving higher alongside a rebound in the price of iron ore. The fine 62% in Singapore was 123.54. BHP Group advanced 3% to 38.86, while Fortescue Metal Group firmed 2.5% to 14.60. Rio Tinto closed the week lower, though, dropping 0.8% to 99.60. On Friday, it reported that it had downgraded its iron ore export target for the third consecutive year and downgraded production for a number of its other business units. The gains from the smaller miners also helped to support the sector. South32 climbed 6.7% to 3.58. Linus Rare Earths advanced 6.8% to 6.95. And Nickel Mines added 4.8% to 98.5 cents. Gold miners also supported the sector, with the price of the precious metal rising first as the US yield curve flattened. A stronger-than-expected US CPI report raised fears tapering from the Federal Reserve would curtail long-term growth. Newcrest Mining rose 5.2% to 24.67. Northern Star Resources advanced 5.3% to 9.71. Perseus Mining climbed 14.8% to 171. Silver Lake Resources added 9.9% to 166. And Regus Resources closed the week 8% higher at $2.30. Growth stocks were also among the market's best performers as bond yields declined through the week. Technology stocks rose firmly, though, led by Appen, which rose 8.1% to 9.65, and Afterpay was up 1.74% on Friday to 122.78. Consumer stocks also performed well after New South Wales emerged from its lockdown on Monday. ANZ reported a surge in spending on the first day of New South Wales reopening, up 20% on the week prior. Kogan.com rose 11.8% to 11.20. GUD Holdings added 7.8% to 11.21. Breville Group advanced 5.9% to 28.63, and ARB Corp firmed 6% to 50.46. The losses on the local share market, though, were led by the major banks. Commonwealth Bank slid 2.1% to 102.28. Westpac fell 2.2% to 25.39, and ANZ declined 0.3% to 27.87, but NAB rose 1% to 28.65. And Star Entertainment Group tumbled 13.8% to 3.69 after reports in the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age and on 60 Minutes alleged that it allowed money laundering and infiltration by organised crime figures at its Sydney and Gold Coast casinos. The reports also weighed on Sky City Entertainment Group, which fell 6.7% to 2.95. And IAG closed the week lower after the Australian Securities and Investments Commission announced it was suing the insurer for misleading and deceptive conduct after offering around 600,000 customers discounts that were based on inflated premiums. It fell 5.2% to 4.92. And Bloomberg analyst Mike McGlone, who has been predicting the price of Bitcoin will go over $100,000 US per coin, revealed he believes US patriotism could help the flagship cryptocurrency hit that six-figure target. In a tweet, McGlone revealed that US patriotism could help the cryptocurrency's price move up as the US dollar dominance, tax revenue, and other factors could lead the US Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, to allow a Bitcoin exchange-traded fund, an ETF, to trade on US exchanges. In the tweet, the analyst pointed out that the most important reason for his belief is that it counters China's response to the cryptocurrency space, which was a recent all-out ban that forced cryptocurrency mining operations and exchanges to move out of the country. And Bloomberg reported that the Securities and Exchange Commission is poised to allow the first US Bitcoin futures exchange traded fund to begin trading in a watershed moment for the cryptocurrency industry, according to a number of people who are close to the matter. The regulator isn't likely to block the products from starting to trade next week. Unlike Bitcoin ETF applications that the regulator has previously rejected, the proposals by ProShares and Invesco Limited are based on futures contracts and were filed under mutual fund rules that SEC Chairman Gary Gensler has said provide significant investor protections. A spokesperson for the SEC declined to comment, as indeed did officials from ProShares. Bitcoin almost touched 60,000 US, that's the highest since April, while futures on crypto-linked stocks rallied in US pre-market trading. The largest cryptocurrency by market value has rallied almost 90% in 3 months and is closing in on the record high of 64,869 set earlier this year. Barring a last-minute reversal, the fund launch will be the culmination of a nearly decade-long campaign by the $6.7 trillion ETF industry. Advocates have sought approval as a confirmation of mainstream acceptance of cryptocurrencies since Cameron and Tyler Winklevoss, the twins best known for their part in the history of Facebook, filed the first application for a Bitcoin ETF back in 2013. Approval has for years been out of the grasp of issuers who, amid myriad false signs of progress and outright rejections, have tried to get a variety of different structures cleared for trading. Over the years, there have been plans for funds that propose to hold Bitcoin via a digital vault or that could use leverage to juice returns. Others sought to mitigate Bitcoin's famous volatility. That's a key point of contention for the SEC. And the SEC has in the past argued that the crypto space is plagued with investor hazards. The SEC has expressed concerns that prices could be manipulated and liquidity might be insufficient and that Bitcoin's drastic price swings might be too much for individual investors. Bitcoin's last three full-year returns were a 74% loss, followed by gains of 95% and 305%. Additionally, the SEC has questioned whether funds would have the information necessary to adequately value cryptocurrencies or related products. There have also been questions about validating ownership of the coins held by funds and the threat from hackers. Many crypto advocates were heartened when Gensler took the helm at the agency. They cited his previous interest in the crypto world. He once taught a class at MIT's Sloan School of Management called Blockchain and Money. But the chairman has also, in recent months, referred to the space as the Wild West and has signalled that he wants more robust oversight of the markets. The mood appeared to shift in August when Gensler signalled he'd favour funds based on CME-traded Bitcoin futures filed under a 1940s law, and he reiterated that stance late last month. That led to a wave of futures-backed filings and unbridled optimism among issuers that approval could be imminent. The speculation has fueled a torrential rebound in the price of Bitcoin, which has essentially doubled since breaking below $30,000 in late July. Four futures-backed Bitcoin ETFs could begin trading on US exchanges this month, with deadlines for applications from Van Eyck and Valkyrie also approaching. Meanwhile, dozens of cryptocurrency exchange-traded products have launched in Canada and across Europe. Bitcoin was at 61,433, up 6.36% at the time of writing, while Ethereum was up 1.69% to 3,840. So standing back, the question now is, are we through the worst of the downside and is everything going to go up higher again? Or is this just a temporary reversal? Well, it's too soon to say, actually, but we'll keep watching the data and we'll get a better read as the earnings season continues. What I would say is that I do think the Evergrande situation, and more broadly the China property segment, is one to watch, because defaults there could definitely spill over and dent markets internationally. But the very strong earnings from the US suggest to me that, weird though it may seem, stocks may go higher, and it may be that the expected reversal will be later. But of course, then we have the Fed and the question of whether they will start tapering and whether they will start lifting rates. And that then begs the question as to whether then markets will still stay where they are or whether they'll come back. Uncertainty rules. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.